Imagine for a moment that you are a road-weary traveler. You're tired, you're hungry, and wondering if there will ever be a safe place to rest. You've been told there's an outpost ahead that provides safety, information for the road ahead, and people who understand what the journey is like. You keep scanning the horizon, hoping against hope that it will be there. Then, as you come over a rise in the terrain, you suddenly catch a glimpse of it. There it stands, beckoning you to come and find the rest you need. You're moments away from the outpost. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Outpost Podcast. I'm Dr. Ray Mitch, your host. Thanks so much for joining me. As you are listening in to the Outpost, it is meant to be a place of sanctuary, a place of safety, an opportunity to work out questions about God and yourself and others. And that's really what the Outpost is meant to be. Hopefully you enjoyed the intro. Hopefully it sets the mood for what we're trying to do here. Because we want to be a place where the doubters and the wounded and the confused and the beat up and beat down and the bent and bruised who feel like their lives are a disappointment to God or they have been hurt by the people of God, this is the place to be. This is the conversation to be had about that. So if you have watched any of our previous episodes, and I am armed here with my own coffee of the fine blend of coffee that we have here at Sedalia at Sacred Heart Retreat House. That's where we are. Yes, indeed, I am on location one more time. And you have the opportunity to hear a little bit different, I think, tone to the retreat. And just to give you a sense of context, I do, because it's myself and another co-director, Dr. Bill Saxby, who, if you've listened to any of the previous episodes on the psych monologues, you will have heard a little bit of his thoughts and take on the silent retreat and what it's here for and what we're trying to accomplish. So he is my co-director, if you will, co-spiritual director in doing these groups. And we do two a spring. At this point, we certainly can use your prayers and even financial support to make it possible to do more. But we do two in the spring, one for CCU students and another one for non-CCU students, although right now it is populated by all alumni, some reaching back 4 and 5 years. I think the average length of time or the average number of retreats we have represented in our group is probably 3 or 4. We have some that are a little bit more. So they're veterans. They've been down this path before. They know what it's like. So I thought I'd give you kind of a brief look in to the nature of a retreat with people that have done it before, and they know what they're coming in with mostly. And to some degree, the challenge of coming away from a job, other demands, relationships, all of that is really a challenge, I think, in a lot of ways, because we have this freedom of freedom from some of the typical responsibilities we have every day. And we take time out, which, you know, ironically, we call a retreat. I'm not sure it's really a retreat in literal sense. It is a pulling away and a time to reflect, at least. And so we do the retreats here in exactly the same way we do with the CCU students. We do it Thursday night. We meet and then we're here Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, which is where we are right now, and then Sunday morning, where we close up the retreat. and spend some time reflecting on what the weekend has been like and how God has spoken or not spoken. I mean, in a lot of cases, a retreat is not just for the soul, it is also for the body and even the mind. And I think oftentimes, and I've heard that even this retreat, you know, am I doing something wrong because I'm sleeping more than usual, or I'm not really doing anything quote unquote productive, which a retreat actually has a way of confronting our notions of what productivity really is all about. And so I think sometimes people end up getting caught up with the same mentality they had before coming to the retreat and then imposing it into the retreat itself. And that really is where what has happened here as well. I think the overriding first night observations was tired and fatigued and not really clear about what direction to take. And in a lot of cases, I think if we come with a preconceived agenda, a lot of times we will get disappointed because this is a space more than anything. It's a space that we set aside intentionally to let God work in however he sees fit. And in a lot of ways, it's hard to let that happen without creating an expectation or creating some kind of list of objectives or things that I need to get done in it. And that's really ultimately unfortunate, I think, because it then robs the freedom of the Holy Spirit to move and to get people's, keep my attention when I'm in the midst of it. And so and there was that theme on Thursday night. And then also on Thursday night was kind of the seed that was planted by one of us directors about just trust and what does that actually look like. And the debrief we had last night, Friday night, is a little bit different, partly because it's kind of a transition day. We're transitioning from the hustle and bustle and demands and moving at mock speeds to kind of coming to a screeching halt and having to recalibrate and reorient to where we're at and how we're feeling and what God might be up to, even in our lives coming into this. And that's an important part. I think the transition is every bit as important as the actual work that gets done. And a lot of times on this day, on Saturday, is when a lot of things actually happen. And God is very busy. I've had people kind of confront feeling like they're on a path and they have a choice to make in terms of there's a fork in the road and which path to take, and they don't want to do it wrong, and either they get paralyzed by the fear of doing it wrong, or they take a shot and whatever turns out. And we always, on the backside with 20/20 hindsight, say, well, I could have chosen a little bit better or a little bit differently. And that's unfortunate, really, because we can only choose to the degree that we have the information before us. And when we do that, we have to make the best choice we can. And I think that same thing is true even in retreats like this. And so tonight is a telltale night. It is a an important evening, I think, in terms of our debrief. And I will probably revisit that topic again on the next episode, because I'm going to be doing a flurry of these because I'm going into knee surgery next Wednesday, and I may be very much indisposed, if you will, from the pain of that. And I don't think I want to do a podcast in the middle of all that. So we're going to spend a couple episodes just talking about and debriefing a little bit about the retreat. And then I will start my new series about redemptive communities and what they actually look like and what's important about all of that for the vision of what an outpost is like. Because like I say in the introduction, it's a place to get information for the road. It's a place to meet people that are on similar journeys as us. And it's a place to just rest and be known and recalibrate to the expectations of the journey to date and get some opportunities or some clarity about the journey ahead. I mean, ultimately, if you think about it, an outpost is very much parallel to a truck stop, because a lot of truckers trade a lot of information with one another. If somebody is coming from where I am going, then I can actually get information about where I'm going from that person. And the same thing is true for me to other people. And so we have that same thing happen, I think, even at an outpost like this that we call a silent retreat. So a couple other things that have come up along the way, I think, as we're talking, is a lot of expectations about I should be farther along than I am. And it's disappointing to look at see where we are, because we have this undefined, very amorphous definition of where we should be, which means I will always fail because my goal is not defined. And because of that, then the goal always changes, which also means that as I'm on this journey, I'm always in this state of never enough, which is a problem, all right? The word itself, the phrase itself, is a problem partly because it is embedded in our language. We search for clarity about where we are. And by doing that, the way that we go about doing that is through comparison. And comparison is always deadly. It is always deadly because we generally compare to somebody who's farther ahead than us, who's doing better than us, which also means that we're always doing worse, and we can never really rest and engage with where we are. And I shared this metaphor with somebody today, that if you think about it, if you're familiar with the sign for the infinity sign, right? It's a figure eight that is laying on its side, and there are two loops. One loop, if you want to think about it this way, is if I'm looking at it as I'm looking at you, one loop is the future, which is to my right, and the other loop of the eight is to my left. And there is an intersection point to that figure eight, and that intersection point is called the present. And generally, we end up spending much more of our time in the future or in the past rather than living in the present, because the present is perpetually disappointing. And I'm disappointing in that present. So I will avoid it, and I will distract myself with all the anxiety and all the concerns about the future, or I will spend all of the convicting time and condemnation time with me in the past. And it robs my present. And one of the things I think often happens in a silent retreat is we are invited, not coerced, not in any way, but we are invited to live in the present moment where we are, as we are, with God as He is, and discovering Him in the present rather than what He's done to us or what we feel like He has done to us through even other Christians in the past. And therefore, then we spend all of our time predicting the future. And that is a key to keep in mind, I think, with what the silent retreat does, because in the silence, a window is opened, and a window is opened to allow me to live in the present as it is, and I can be free, or at least spend less time in the future, and I can also be free from the condemnation of the past. Which means then that I have an opportunity to recalibrate my expectations, my thoughts, my even understanding of myself to this new reality. And And it's not a new reality. I mean, that's what's crazy. It's just the same reality, but we spend most of our time trying to fabricate a reality to live in rather than living in the one that we have. And that's what I think is often key to keep in mind. And what I think sometimes people really avoid, because silence confronts us not only with the fact that the silence is inhabited, God's waiting for us there, but it's also we confront ourselves. And we spend so much time either condemning ourselves from the past or setting expectations for ourselves in the future that we can't possibly hit, that we never have the opportunity to live with ourselves as we are. And the secret, I think, to keep in mind is that if we're willing to engage this opportunity of silence and solitude, what we might actually find is that God is saying to us in this moment, and you may not want to meet God. I get that. I understand that. But at the same time, what God is saying to us in the moment, in the present, is, I love you as you are, not as you should be, which would be the future, and not as you used to be in terms of the past, but I love you as you are, not as you should be, because you're never going to be what you should be. And that's what is offered to us, I think, in the present moment of silence. And like I said, I think a lot of people flee silence because they don't want to spend time ultimately with themselves. And to find out that if the thoughts begin to spin down, what will be left? And we're not so sure that we want to find that out. And so a silent retreat does that. And last night we had a lot of conversations about the losses of moving forward and moving beyond. And one person used the metaphor of, you know, a hermit crab that lives in other shells, and it outgrows that shell and has to shed that old one and then is in search of a new one. And during that point in time is vulnerable because it doesn't have the protection of a shell. And that is a very, very vivid picture, because we mourn what we've lost because it's comfortable and it's known and it's predictable, and we are anxious about what we will find, and we're not so sure that we're real crazy about what we find, even though it fits us. And that's changes in life in a lot of ways that I think are important to keep in mind. So there's that. There was also kind of the theme of all the old strategies that I used before to stay connected to God and keep my world ordered are no longer working. And that's a uniquely young person, if you will, problem, because of movement of life and moving into new phases of life and new challenges and so forth. And that's another theme that certainly came out of that. The thing to keep in mind is that we keep, as I said before, we keep creating a fabricated realities rather than living in what is. And I think part of the problem is what is disappointing to us. And so we flee the what is by creating something of what could be, should be, might be, and then end up getting disappointed and angry as a result of all that. And that's a very valid, very important, I think, realization for all of us to contend with. And again, silence and solitude creates the space for that to happen. And for me to grapple with it a little bit, and not grapple with it alone, but grapple with it with other people that are saying that we're met with kind of this chorus of, me too. I get that. It's really hard. And this is what I found, without putting a red bow on it, to say, therefore you should do this. That's what I did, and that's the way this should be. Rather than, I'll tell you what, let's, as hard as it is, let's trust God together in it, in our journey that we're both on, and we can tell each other about what our journeys are like, and we can encourage one another in that journey, and then continue to move in that journey through life together. And that's a big part, I think, of a silent retreat. And it recommends itself. I don't care where you are in your relationship with God, but I think it creates a space for us to explore God as he is, rather than what we've told he has been or he is, or what we've come to conclude as a result of Christians. And we think that Christians are God, instead of Christians are related to God, but they're not him. They don't show his character. That's the reality of sinful, broken people. And how do I fight through all of the hurt that comes from that into the character of the God that loves us, as I said before, as we are? So those are a few of the observations and thoughts about a silent retreat. I think it commends itself to an opportunity to either strengthen or recalibrate or renew your relationship with God. If you already have one, if you're still trying to figure one out, you're more than welcome to do that here as well. You're going to be accepted no matter where you are in this process, because we've all been there before. And that is very much a part, I think, of what an outpost is supposed to be for, right? It's a sanctuary, not some place that I'd go into and I have to keep fighting like I do on the outside of the outpost. And the silent retreat is a special subset, a special aspect, I think, of outpost living and what it offers us. So that's a few of the observations. And I think that's probably all I have for you tonight. Tonight will be a big night. I will do some reflecting on it, and that will come out next week sometime while I'm in surgery, probably. And you'll get an opportunity to hear something about that. SGI-net.org is our home, our digital home. You can find a developing set of resources there. It is the place to check out the dates for the upcoming retreats. Those will get nailed down and published probably tomorrow afternoon. So you'll be able to see what they are, sign up for them. Even if it says it's full, sign up anyway. There will be a waiting list, and there's always a changeover over time with people's schedules and so forth. So the next ones we're looking at is in October, and that generally is for CCU students. At this point, based on our funding levels and things like that, we still only have three for next year, which is 24-25. My hope would certainly be to have more, but at the same time, we have to live ultimately within our means. So you can find us there at sgi-net.org. There's also books to be had, a couple of my books, The Grieving the Loss of Someone You Love and Seasons of Our Grief. There's window sticker if you really want to rep the stuff that we're doing here as well. And you can follow us on any of the platforms you listen to a podcast, whether it's iTunes or Spotify or whatever that might be. You can find us there and listen in as well. And as I said, with funding levels, we need your help. And if you have partnered with us or are considering to do that, thank you so deeply. We can't do this without you. And we're still in waiting, if you will, to develop a group just for leaders, because I really don't want our outpost groups to be leaderless and just get together and not have productive conversations that are guarded, if you will, and cared for by leaders that are trained to be able to do that. So we need to do a leadership training that would be wrapped around a silent retreat, to allow our leaders to get in the right mindset for what they are going to be doing by leading those groups. And they can be anywhere. If you live in Timbuktu or Kathmandu or Kansas, or not that they're the same, but or somewhere in Colorado other than Denver, contact us and let us know that you have your interest in setting an outpost group up there. And we will do and make every effort to make it possible for you to get the training you need and also just the materials and resources you might need to be able to lead that kind of group. So that's the pitch. If you are interested in supporting us, you can do that on sgi-net.org/donate. And there's a donate page there that you can do that on an ongoing basis or one-time gift. All of it is tax deductible, and we would be ever so grateful for your support. This retreat is still teetering on the edge of funding, so if you feel so led based on some of these reports from On Location, that we would be so grateful to be able to have it be fully funded as we move along here. So pray for us tonight, as this is going to be a big night, and tomorrow night as we close out the retreat. And that is it. Next time we talk, I'll be here. Join me. Love ya. Later. Bye.